Hey guys, welcome to Maker Stories. As the name suggests, it is all about stories of makers, wherein in each episode, I will get into casual conversation with makers. And we talk about how they work, how they live, and what motivates them. In this episode, I have Ajay Vishnu as my guest. He is founder and CEO of JetBrain Robotics. Listen to know more about his journey from being a dropout to starting a robotics company in India. Hi Ajay, welcome to Maker Stories.
Thank you for having me, Samarth.
What do you do right now and what has been your journey so far?
Well, I have been a coder. I'd like to be seen as a coder, known as a coder, but I've done a fair bit of different things in my life. And currently, I am the founder and CEO of JetBrain Robotics, which was recently acquired by a Canadian company called Solaris Disinfection Inc. And I joined that company as a CTO in Canada. My entire journey would be in perspective of how I evolved to be what I am right now, right? So technically, I was introduced to computers around 9 years old when my dad got me a Windows 95 computer. I was super excited with it. Because primarily because of two things. One, because the kids, the taller kids in my class hated computers and I kind of liked it and enjoyed doing it in school laboratories. The second was, you know, it just felt like raw power of being able to do something which, you know, you couldn't do on a paper, and you could just make it continuous by just writing a few lines. So this is back when, long back when I was in the school days, when I was trying to do a small turtle app called Logo and making small question answer game wherein it was Kaun Banega Crorepati kind of question and answers where you win some prize by just in the terminal itself. So it was very basic, but I enjoyed those things, right? Later years, I started getting that interest. I started realizing, you know, that was kind of a unique skill set. I started showing off as well as doing more stuff. So to show off, you had to do some stuff, right? So I used to make, around in 9th and 10th standard, I made my first website where I put in, that was in Yahoo Geocities. It's a pretty old hosting site where you could make small websites and put it and host. And I had even got a Google AdSense account. So, you know, that was my first, you know, kind of revenue, I would say, the first earning, which I was trying to get from the ads that I put on the website. So my sister once comes into the website and clicks on the ads a lot on the birthday. And she says, you know, you're going to get a lot of money. And I was like shocked. Oh, shit. This is exactly what they don't want to, right? You catch the people who click a lot. And in 9th standard, I think I got this mail, the first mail wherein I was, they said, you know, I was unethical about trying to earn money. And so they banned my Google account. So that was kind of my first learning, you know, what you should do and what you should not do. That was my early days of, you know, stint with this programming. Towards, you know, later years, I realized, 11th and 12th, 11th, I was a medical student. But I realized I could do nothing with medical and computers. So I moved to mathematics. So I had PCMB plus computers. And in 12th, I moved from medical student to an engineering student. And kind of my only goal was computers. I didn't care about maths or bio. I got into a not so good college in Gurgaon itself. And I realized, you know, it doesn't matter. I got into a, you know, not very good college, which doesn't have a lot of exposure, but I have the computer and internet, right? I'll gain from it. So I started religiously following NPTEL, which was the IIT courses made available online. And I used to also look at the MIT media courses, which were around that time also opened up. And I learned a lot. And I realized, you know, I was running in parallel to my college. I wasn't really doing what I wanted to, in college. So I used to sit more at home and do the minimum attendance that I could in college. And I kept, you know, doing my own stuff. I used to do freelancing. I was, frankly, I started getting small projects wherein people used to say, hey, you will get 10,000. And 10,000 would have been like a big amount when you're in college, right? So that was kind of the place where I actually got to compete with IITians in India directly, head on, and without any physics, chemistry, or maths, right? So that was my motivation to actually start doing coding competitions. Around in the final year, I got to win a coding competition, which was the prize was of a trip to Silicon Valley. And that was one of my biggest changes in life. It was bigger than anything that I ever had. Unfortunately, I didn't have the passport or visa or anything. And the coding competition required that, you know, I had everything. And when the winner was announced, they wanted me to immediately by the next month visit San Francisco. So when that didn't happen, they gave me prize, you know, that entire trip money as prize money. The first thing I did was take a car. Instead of saying that I got a US trip, I said, you know, they gave me a car. So winning this competition actually gave me a lot of attention from my seniors who had passed out of the college and also some small companies in and around Gurgaon. So a lot of companies called me up for internship. And one of those companies was CoCubes, where I went talked to the CTO. And I was like super excited by what he had done in the past. He had 4 patents in his kitty. He had worked in Microsoft. And I was looking up to him in a way that as a mentor. So I wanted to work with him in any way possible, right? So I took that internship and started going to the company as an intern. But sadly, my college, the HOD, there came a point wherein the HOD came to know about this. And he told me, you know, we don't provide internships. You've got to you know, complete your studies first and then go for any kind of job, right? And I continued to do this, but the college professors, the other professors actually told me, you can come in the morning, we'll put the attendance and then you can go for the internship. So that was kind of a setting for 3 months wherein I continued to go to the college on the 35 kilometers on the left of my house and then 70 kilometers to the right of my house. But after 3 months, this HOD somehow got to know about my, you know, the internship that I'm continuing to do without attending the classes. And he asked me to choose, you know, he said, no, you cannot actually continue this. I have told you, warned you before, you either go for the internship or you go for this, complete your college. And for me, the answer was very simple. You know, I saw this as people wanted to complete college so that they could go to these companies, right? And here I had an opportunity to work in those companies. Frankly, building a JavaScript library in 6 months was more beneficial than, you know, completing another course in those 6 months. So choice was natural to me. I went and asked the CoCube CTO, you know, is there a problem if I don't complete my degree? And that's where he said, you know, I don't care about this, but you handle your parents. Because in India, parents are very, not very happy about children doing all this dropout stuff. So I said, fine, that's an easy choice. I won't tell them. I never told them. So every morning I used to get dressed up and go to CoCubes, and my parents never knew that, you know, I was going to a company rather than a college. So this was my last 6 months of my college. After the 6 months, one of my best friends comes jumping home and saying, you know, hey, I got the graduation, Ajay, you know, this is the degree and everything. And mom is like, he also goes to college with you. What happened to his degree? And that's when they come to know. Dad and me had a big fight. And frankly, after the fight, it ended as Dad said, this guy will come to know when he faces the harsh reality of life. He'll come back to us and tell us that he wants to complete the college. But I had resolved that day that that moment will never come, because I had a job and I made sure, you know, I will always get a better job and prove that, you know, I don't really need that degree. Over my past years, I've worked in different companies, and motivation has been this degree. So to just prove the fact that the coding and the skill is all that I need to continue what I was doing. Once I was in Sapient, I got a very good opportunity where I could do much more than just be part of a regular project do the same thing with the same technology that I had, because I really had by that time worked on a lot of technologies and I wanted to implement all those. This is where I was seen by the director of Sapient in one of the hackathons where I mentioned all this. And there was he found some other similar people like me over around in Sapient and put us together into a lab called Kepler Lab. So that was like a big win for me, as in I was able to create a mini startup. Kepler Lab started and we had a good idea of what we wanted to do in terms of things that we wanted to make, the experiments we wanted to do and showcase it to the world. Typically, to give you an idea, we used to follow MIT Media Lab, wherein the typical study would involve human-computer interaction. So when we are talking about human-computer interaction, we are talking about different forms of user experiences. We had a lot of projects that we were able to showcase to, you know, the conferences out there, and that really gave us a lot of exposure to the world. I would say for me, it was more of a confidence building exercise, wherein I could actually see people getting awed by stuff that I was creating, and hardware kind of interested, you know, I started growing interest in hardware as well. That's where I realized, you know, that where there's a lot more value to it. But towards the end of my career in Sapient, I got another offer wherein it was too hard to refuse. So this is where I wanted to do a startup, and I wanted money for that startup. Typically, at least a bootstrap money where I could start the hardware and be able to try out the things I wanted to. And that's where Auto Ninja, the company that I last worked for, came in. And they offered me almost 3 times the salary of Sapient. And he also offered to invest in my startup when I wanted to after a year or so. So that was a very good, you know, too hard to refuse offer. Plus, it was a remote job. And I was practicing to actually build what I needed to in the future. So that gave me a lot of, you know, other aspect beyond just coding. Somewhere between 2017, a random stuff came in wherein my friends told me, you know, hey, Ajay, you are a dropout, and there's a show for a dropout. And they tagged me in that, and that show, you know, the audition forms of that show in Facebook. And there, one of the ladies actually challenged me, you know, you keep talking about, so there was a question wherein they asked, if you were to do a startup, what would it be on? And I said, robotics. And she said, you know, if you know, you keep saying about robotics, but you're a web developer and you're just a software coder, I would like to test your skills. And if you can make a robot in the next 15 days, fresh from scratch, anything, any simple, you know, robot, I would select you. And I was like, okay, let me try that. And in the next 15 days, I made my first small prototype, which was very similar to what people do in colleges and not very, you know, gizmo mm-hmm. stuff. But I ended up taking it to this audition in Mumbai in front of a large panel on TV. And they kind of questioned at me because the lady who had challenged me was nowhere there. And the panel thought, you know, I was just a kid who was trying to showcase something in the form of a business idea. And that was kind of a strange thing that happened. But they liked that I tried to do something when I told them that, it was against the challenge. They liked that, that I was up for any challenge that came along my way, and they kind of selected. Basically, yeah, this was Dropout, wherein I ended up being in part of a show which I really didn't understand. And I thought, you know, I really used to like playing different games and winning it, like Counter-Strike and all those stuff. I thought this is another game where I have to be someone I'm not, right? And I just play that. So here I was, a coder who had gone into a TV show where the tasks were all sales and business side, wherein the whole idea was to treat it more like a real business and different scenarios of a business and win them. So I realized that would be a good idea to understand how, you know, quickly a business would be formed. And that was a quick test of different sorts. And strangely, I ended up winning it. By the end of the show, I was pitching to a real investor with a real idea that I had to, take as a startup in front. And I was also supposed to take 2 people along with me who were non-technical and who were pretty new. So I didn't really want to risk my idea of robotics right there. And I think that was the right decision. In the final episode, I ended up pitching about the startup, blockchain-based startup for identity. It was basically supposed to transfer identity in terms of your Aadhaar card, your PAN card or anything, keep it in your mobile phone and transfer it to another person on another mobile phone by not holding it in the server. We were ensuring that, you know, there was more safety and security of the personal identity stuff. Towards the end of the year, we realized there's something called DigiLocker, and government will never let us, you know, keep Aadhaar on the blockchain or any other platform, because Aadhaar was getting a lot of
attention from everyone in terms of privacy, and companies had to do a lot to keep any sort of personally identifiable information in their store. So I typically realized, you know, this would be a bigger challenge, much bigger challenge than I thought, rather than just being able to implement a technology of transferring on blockchain. So that's where I realized this, and I chose to move ahead with my journey. And I gave my equity, most of my equity, to the only founder in the company that was left, and he continued to run that. He's continuing to run that now. So before actually jumping out of it, I had this Amazon's offer, which I could take and join back to the company, or this choice of doing something that I always wanted to, that was a robotic startup. So I thought, why not? Let's do this, delay this, since you already turned into an entrepreneur, why not delay this by a few months and see where it goes, right? So that's where I registered under the company. Typically, there is a story to that, I tried and went around with talking to hospitals, different hospitals. After a while, a hospital actually asked me, what is your company name? If you don't have a company, you can't really sign an NDA. That's when I actually had to sign an NDA to work with them. And to understand how much movement of medicines and movement of stuff happens in the hospital. The reason I wanted to understand this was because my idea was involving a robotic transportation of medicines. So where I needed to understand what the typical payload would look like, what the typical frequency of movement would look like, or what a typical structure should be for the transport. So to understand this, I undertook all this. And around this time is when JetBrain Robotics was born. This was my, the current company until this month when we got acquired, right? So that's in itself a different story.
Yours has been a very fascinating journey. Can you also tell us a bit more about how did you come up with an idea of robotics in healthcare?
Yeah, so my sister is actually a doctor, a senior resident in Fortis, and she and me used to talk a lot about the startup I could do. And primarily, I had interest in robotics, and I wanted to see where I could apply. And she was the one who could give me most insights about some organization. And so she asked me whether can you do something related to medicines? Can you do related to something in terms of surgery? And that's where I started looking around. And I saw, Intuitive Surgical, companies like Intuitive Surgical were the top in terms of the robotics development, with the revenues, highest revenues at that time. So I realized, there was money in healthcare. There's less robotics in healthcare, because when I looked across the globe, there were all kinds of robots in a hospital or a healthcare environment. But the only things that India had was more of surgery related, robots, which meant there was scope for the other kinds of robots that we could try out and develop. So that was kind of my initial idea. And like I said, it started like an experiment where I went into hospitals, questioning them about their transportation to understand really where it could lead to, right? A typical idea of everyone was robotics would be very costly. And I was thinking, if the robots were produced in India and if the people involved in producing the robots were Indians, why would it be that costly, right? It's costly today because, it's produced outside, it's manufactured outside, there's engineering costs, and there's the scaling that is required would actually be from a foreign country. And obviously it will cost much more. So this is typically the experiment that I wanted to undertake. And I had the savings that I had done over the years that I worked. So I wanted to put that savings into it for an experiment.
And what were some of the challenges while starting a hardware company in India?
Okay, so first of all, I realized, there's no hardware ecosystem in India.
Unlike software, typical hardware would require a lot more handholding in terms of experience as well. So there's no ecosystem, there's no experience share. There are some bits and bits of makerspace and stuff in Kerala, in Bangalore, in Mumbai, in Delhi, bits of that. But typically, India is not really that hardware focused in terms of startups. I would say, yes, industries have been focused on the hardware, but then those are industries. There's a big difference because that they don't really own the maker culture. Industries start with an idea of building something and they build it, right? They build big machines, not really oriented towards the software or implementing AI or ML into it in the future also. Because of that, you know, there's a large gap wherein the kids that come out of colleges today know about a lot of hardware that industries don't know about, and industries don't even want to adopt it. So there's that kind of gap is something that I observed. When I started Jetbrains Robotics, I found no one who could produce a motor that we wanted. The first thing I used to, you know, the first thing that came up that I when I searched was in China or in Japan or in Thailand. I really realized this, that there was very less in terms of hardware support in India. So the first thing that would require is actually importing this kind of stuff, which meant more cost. The entire idea of having a low-cost stuff in India would just go away when we start importing stuff from outside. And that's typically what is happening here. So that is one of the biggest challenges, which also exists even today, because we still haven't been able to produce the kind of cheap products that we want that could be adopted by India. Other thing I would say would be the kind of interest from the investor perspective. The investors are really skeptic about investing into long-term hardware startups. Or typically, if you look at something like a Fitbit or something which takes years to build, and the investors trust that, you know, once it's built, you'll be able to scale it. And until then, we'll have to keep investing on iterations of the product, which typically Indian investors don't really consider as a viable option. They'd rather put their money on a software and see it fail immediately rather than putting on a hardware and see it growing into a success after down 2-3 years, maybe more actually, because hardware cycles are long and the iterations are much longer than a software.
What was your experience finding the talent for your hardware startup?
So I have both a good experience as well as a bad experience. The bad experience I would say first is that kids out of college are more looking for, they start thinking about the scope of anything before they start picking up. So if they start picking up a subject, they say, what is the scope of the good jobs in this? Or what is the scope of doing that? They don't realize, you know, whatever you do good, you can be on the creamy layer of that particular job, and you can still earn as much as any other job, right? So this is the reason because of which most of the mechanical guys today who want to do robotics would actually think of doing software or OpenCV or computer vision and all that stuff. So what happens is they are kind of misguided people because they have interest, but they're kind of misguided. When they come out of college, they write everything in their resumes. So this is a common to everyone, right? Not just hardware people, the mechanical people, but every kid that is coming out of college thinks that they need to show everything on their resume. They write C++, HTML, Java, .NET, everything that they've ever touched or written a Hello World program, right? Which is very wrong, because what happens is, these kids have lost their opportunity to showcase what they're good at. And maybe they're not good at mastered in anything, but they're certainly good at certain of them. But by putting everything on their resumes and by putting everything in their kitty, what they end up doing is being jack of all trades. So I would say the talent today, whenever they come out, companies need to spend a lot of time sharpening their skills on one of those, or identifying them even, because the kids don't even know which direction to go. They just have this mixed bag of everything, which I think should be done by colleges at maybe final year or a third year kind of place, wherein they should be told, even if you're computer science, what is your specialization? And this is what you should go with to companies about. You know, if there's a batch of 60 people, then at least 10 of them might be very good at computer vision and OpenCV. They should just follow that at least for the last 6 months. So by the time when they're entering a company, they're OpenCV or computer vision specialist. And the other person does not talk about it. He should talk about his specialization. So this is kind of my opinion on that, about the education as well as the talent that is coming out of India. And primarily, I would say this is why most of the kids are unemployable. It's not just because they don't know stuff. It's also because even if they don't know what they specialize on.
That's a pretty good advice for a college student. You also mentioned that JetBrain Robotics has been acquired by a Canadian company called Solaris Disinfectants. So what is next for JetBrain Robotics?
So, so regarding the acquisition, so Solaris happened to be one of our customers around in December when they had a large order to be placed this year. When I went there, met them, I was also looking for, getting co-founders in JetBrain. And this looked like a perfect marriage when they proposed, to have an acquisition and me joining them as a CTO. So the idea of this was, has a very well established market, and JetBrain has this technological muscle which we've been building up over the years. And typically, what we are looking forward to is to capture the service robotics industry as a whole and see where all we could, put to use our technologies the use cases and applications that would best benefit from. Going forward, we are looking primarily in terms of disinfection robots. We are looking in terms of the medicine transportation and patient care, obviously, and a lot of new iterations to those robots, which will augment the same environment with a lot more possibilities. So I wouldn't be. If I say it's healthcare, then we'll have a lot more products coming around to support this ecosystem. So that's our idea going forward.
Now, if we switch gears and talk a bit more about you as a person, what is the typical day look like for you?
Oh, my! I would say I hate routines. I don't really like routines. Actually, put you in terms. What do you call a kind of a need to do more, wherein if you can be effective on something else, you won't really be effective in that because you have to do something else, right? So I would say I don't really like to set a routine, but I do have plans for I do set plans for the whole week. This is typically what I do on over the week. So my days don't start with days and nights because I'm also working with a Canadian company. So 9 to 6 usually happens to be the time when I'm working for JetBrain stuff. So I kind of organize everything, all the calls, all the meetings that happen towards the earlier, earlier part of the day. And later part of the day is usually goes in helping my team with different technologies. So that's what happens during the day. And around 6 o'clock, I start with my other team in Canada. And this cycle repeats because I have set all the calls around 6 to 9. And towards 9 to 12, I start coding or solving the issues that happen over there, on the portal or anything with the clients. Because we have more than 200 robots deployed at the client locations in Canada and US. So all those clients have this live server where they are looking at the deployed robots and they're using it. So a typical day looks like in a large chunks being part of JetBrain and Solaris.
And what are some of the apps and the tools that you cannot really live without?
I don't really have a lot of tools and apps. I would say I have some favorite websites. Stack Overflow happens to be one. That has been my homepage since I would say 2014. Yeah, and so I've been part of Stack Overflow. That is something that I love to view, love to answer, love to be part of, and that's typically what keeps me in touch with a lot of ongoing problems that people have across. So that's a check, reality check of where we are in terms of the problems, also give you an idea of what the current mainstream is dealing with, right? Which means if you're working with some technology, being part of that particular technology hashtag and looking at it daily gives you a fair bit of idea of where the world is at, with that technology, right? So that's one of the websites, I would say. For the apps, I would say I spend a lot of time on social media. So Facebook, LinkedIn happen to be something that I use a lot. I wouldn't say I wouldn't be able to live without them. I can live without any of those apps, and if they don't exist, I would be happy to make one. that is kind of the app side of it, I would say. But technically, since I've never been drawn by a single language or technology, so for example, when I'm helping JetBrain, I'm working on Python and C++, and a lot of times on the terminal rather than any IDE, right? So there's no tools really that we use there. Then when I'm working on something in Solaris side, I'm working on .NET. So I obviously have to use all the Microsoft stuff, which is the Visual Studio and the SQL database and everything. So typically I've learned to not grow affinity with any tools.
Now if we switch gears and talk about maybe some of the software element, what really drives you? Why do you do what you do?
I've always idealized someone or the other during my different point of time. Over the last 5 years, it has been Elon Musk. And the best part I've really took from his, everyone takes different aspects of a person and wants to grow in that. My favorite aspect from his life is the way he takes risks without worrying about anything that comes out of it. So if he gets $100 million from PayPal sale and he puts it on making rockets, which he has no idea about, that's a risk-taking attitude which I wanted to inculcate in myself. So that really allows you to be really free in terms of being able to do what you want to do. Every day that I grow, every day that I wake up, the reason I want to work is this immense ambition of being able to be part of the world in a very, very big way. So I see myself as there. When I was 25, I was seeing myself at that point in 30. Now, since I'm 30, I'm seeing myself at that point in 35. Right? So that's kind of a goal that I keep moving and pushing ahead. But that's always there. My goal has always been to massively be part of something very big, as big as possible. That is what the scenarios allow you to be. That keeps driving me, and everything that I do, I take it as an addition to my knowledge. So even if I don't get paid a lot on certain things, for example, over the past 2.5 years, I was paid not a penny for JetBrain, right? So the work I was doing didn't even have a guarantee of money coming in. Instead, I was losing a lot in terms of opportunity costs, the things, my savings itself, everything was going down. I literally made a graph of my life after companies. So there was a graph, it was going up and up and up, and at a point it became straight, and then it was straight to down. And I made this graph when my Citibank account went to zero. So I had a very good graph where it started from zero and went into zero, right? So then I closed that account because Citibank people called me up and said, you don't have enough money to keep hold a Citibank account. So that's when it hit me. This is the day you understand. You can be penniless and you can be a lot more rich on another day. So the money keeps coming and going. I don't think that really matters a lot. Obviously, that knowledge is what matters because that is what attracts that money. So that is one of the reasons that you would like to be in knowledge. If even if people are after money, they could still be after a lot of knowledge because that can just increase it multifold.
What would be your advice for people who would like to take their idea or a prototype to a next level in starting a hardware company?
Right. So one of my advices would be to actually find ways to sustain yourself, because hardware is, like I said, typically hard. So if hardware is hard and you don't have enough support from different people around you, you might have to find a lot of contingency plans. So in my case, for example, I took a lot of freelancing stuff as well during JetTrain to keep the money flowing and having the stuff, because the robot itself wouldn't sell. But I had skills which I could sell on the side and, you know, get some couple of months running, because I did freelancing stuff for other people. So like that, I would say if you want to go to the market, it's going to be a harder journey and you might require a lot more money than you imagine you need. So have contingency plan of gaining some, you know, some sort of backing in terms of financial assistance, be it loan or anything. I wouldn't suggest loans because you know, that will put you into a kind of mode of have to do kind of mode, do or die situation. Putting yourself into a do or die situation with the hardware is really bad. So never try to put yourself into a do or die. Maybe software, yes, it's fine. Because you can have iterations to it, you can have graphical designs to it, add it to it later. But with the hardware, you'll be stuck with one particular design which can't go to the market unless a manufacturer gives you the end product in some form, right? So yeah, that is my advice. If you're going for scaling or building a startup, be sure to find alternative financial methods.
I think it is a great way to end our conversation. Thanks, Ajay, for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me, Samarth.
Thanks everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, request you to share it within your social network. You can share your review and comments to us via email makerstories@outlook.com. I will be back with more maker stories in next episode. Until then, happy making.